Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here. This is hour two for the 21st of December, just 4 days before Christmas, as we're celebrating together the birth of our King, following Jesus in this world and saying once again this morning that we are part of a kingdom that knows no end. And it's from that basis that we try to have our conversations on Faith Radio Mornings, invite our guests, and talk about so many different dimensions of our life together. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kafsner, joined in studio by names that you know, Rachel Sutton and Paul Perreault, that give so much each day, day in and day out, to make this the show that it is. And of course, we love our guests that come on regularly as well, and that includes our friend Adam Holtz from PluggedIn.com that does movie reviews and video game reviews and is always so helpful for us as parents and grandparents to help us think through so many of these popular culture items with our kids. And Adam, this past week, it's come up in the show that I have not seen the movie It's a Wonderful Life, and I reflected on that with the listeners a bit, and sort of the look of shock and consternation I received from Rachel and Paul in studio here, and even sort of the threat of excommunication. I think if we were in a different era, Adam, I might have even been burned at the stake on this one. And so help me. You're the movie guy. You got to help me with this one. I've never seen it. Is that really problematic for my life?
Well, I hope it's not problematic, because my big reveal this morning is I haven't seen it either.
Yeah.
So you and I perhaps can start some sort of wonderful support group for being ostracized for not having seen this classic.
I appreciate that whole misery loves company, that solidarity and pain and suffering, Adam. I mean, this is a key theme, and you and I can really engage with that this morning.
I know, and I was telling Paul before I came on that there's two categories of movies, before Star Wars and after Star Wars, and I've pretty much seen everything since 1977, but before that it gets a little bit spotty. You know, I know that I have seen, you know, clips of it. I've probably seen the important scenes. I'm familiar with the story, but I don't think I have sat and watched it end to end in one sitting, which frankly I could say that of Frozen and Moana and several other things too. I can recite the whole movie, but I don't know that I've watched either one of them all the way through.
Well, I love it. You give me great hope that my future is still secure, Adam, despite what maybe some of my colleagues might think. Well, we love having you on
here, Peter, is to give you hope. Actually, that's not my job at all. That's Jesus's job, but I can talk about movies at least.
Well, I love it. And you do such a great job of that. I certainly look forward to our segments here on Friday mornings, just covering so many of the movies. And Adam, you and I have covered a lot of different movies. And some weeks there's not really that much to cover, but this is one of those weeks where there's a lot to get to. So right after break, let's jump right in with Mary Poppins Returns, as well as the new Aquaman movie. That's the voice of Adam Holtz from PluggedIn.com. We'll get into some of these movies next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We're joined at this time on Friday by Adam Holtz of PluggedIn.com, doing so many of the movie reviews that we pay attention to. I know as a family, it's a place that I go and read about a movie before I go see it with my kids. And Adam, I don't know that I really need to do that this time with Mary Poppins Returns. I can't imagine there's too much objectionable content, and I'm really looking forward to seeing this movie.
Yeah, you know, there's not much objectionable content in Mary Poppins, and you know, we take a pretty fine-toothed comb over things, but it's not very often that we can just say, hey, if you're interested in this and interested in the nostalgia that it sparks, this is a really worthy sequel to a beloved Disney classic that came out 54 years ago. And in fact, I read one article that said this is Disney's most important movie, not Mary Poppins Returns, but in the Disney canon, it made the argument that Mary Poppins was number one. So this is a big deal, and they handle it really well. And the story, you know, kind of like what they've done with the Star Wars movies, there's Star Wars again, I can't just leave it alone. It really in some ways parallels the original. This time around, Michael Banks and his sister Jane, who were just little kids in the first one, have grown up. Michael's beloved wife has passed away. He has three children, and they are having trouble making ends meet. And so the loan sharks and the bankers are circling, and Mary Poppins, who is portrayed by Emily Blunt this time around, swoops in magically, and, you know, she kind of saves the day, but she saves the day by helping them understand that regardless of our circumstances never have to have the last word, that we can always rely on each other, and even when things seem bleak, there's always hope. And maybe things turn out the way we want them to. Of course, this is a Disney movie, so I think that we can safely say we're going to move toward happily ever after here. But some really terrific messages, I think, in this movie. And I think if you're a fan of the original, this is going to be a pretty satisfying experience for you.
Well, it's a pretty big risk to take on such a beloved movie. I know that we've seen things like Lion King 2 come out, and Disney's in the business of doing sequels, but it sure sounds like this one might be able to fall into the canon in some ways that you described, that it might have some staying power moving forward.
Well, I hope so. I mean, it seems like the initial response has been a little bit tepid at the box office, but I would just chalk that up to there being so many options and surprisingly a number of things that are really family friendly right now. It's still getting competition from The Grinch and Ralph Wrecks the Internet. That's hard to say back to back. You know, I think there's a lot of options out there right now, but this one is definitely worth consideration.
Well, another big movie that, of course, has come out would be another of the DC comic franchise, and that'd be an Aquaman this time around. He was certainly a beloved character for me growing up watching the cartoon Justice League, and he was central to the relationships with Superman, Wonder Woman, and all of that. But DC has not experienced anywhere near the success as Marvel, other than maybe the Wonder Woman movie. Does this one have any hope to make an impact that way?
Well, the interesting thing is that they have adjusted their release strategy, and this thing had already made almost $300 million in the last 2 weeks overseas before it releases today in the United States. So I think financially it's going to be just fine. The reviews have been all over the map. Some people have said it's one of the best epic action superhero movies ever. Lots of other people have said, it's just kind of silly and ridiculous. We're probably somewhere right in the middle, but more to the point for our audience, I think what people need to know is that, you know, this is a film that's got a fair bit of profanity and some scenes of violence that are really pretty intense. So there are characters who die, and the film depicts them. So in some ways, this one is a little bit grittier than perhaps we've seen with some of the other DC and Marvel movies, and parents need to know that even though, you know, you kind of think of Aquaman as the kinder, gentler, blander hero. Like when you think about Aquaman's personality from the comics, there really isn't one. But Jason Momoa inhabits him sort of like a Greek god here, and it's a rocking, fast-moving story from start to finish. So I think if you're fans of the franchise, and, you know, you've got older teens on up, it's probably going to be a fun go. But if you've got younger kids, definitely, definitely, definitely check out our review at PluggedIn.com.
Well, and some of the reviews that I've seen on this too, Adam, is that the central character of Aquaman seems to have developed maybe sort of a sense of humor, almost like Thor in the Marvel Universe developed a sense of humor. There almost is like this inner channeling of the Guardians of the Galaxy, it seemed, that's starting to hit across some of these superheroes.
Well, I think so. And I think that the interesting thing that DC has done, and it seems like they're always playing catch-up, is after the success of The Dark Knight, there was this movement toward, oh, we have to make everything darker and grittier and grimier. But it didn't work with Superman. It didn't work critically. It didn't work commercially. And with the success of Marvel's funnier movies, I think now they're saying, oh, no, we gotta make this thing funnier. I know my favorite line in Justice League, where Aquaman showed up the first time, is when he tells Batman, "Dress like a bat. I dig it." And, you know, lines like that are what make this movie fun. So they're certainly trying, and we'll have to just wait and see this weekend whether it really connects with U.S. moviegoers.
We're talking with Adam Holtz this morning from PluggedIn.com about some of these holiday movies. It's obviously a big season for many movies to come out that are part of pretty significant franchises. And Adam, another movie coming out this weekend will be in the line of the Transformer saga and the whole franchise there. I know when we visited Disney World about a month ago or so, we went to the virtual reality ride of the Transformers, and that may have been the best ride that we did at Universal Studios. And what do we see with this movie? Do Transformers still have some kind of legs in terms of a box office hit?
Well, we're going to find out. I mean, every time you think that the really, really terrible movies in this franchise should have killed this thing off, you know, they sort of start the engine up again and come back from the dead. And the interesting thing is this is sort of a prequel that takes us all the way back to the beginning. And as the title suggests, it focuses on Bumblebee, who's kind of a beloved, quirky Transformer who transforms into a vintage Volkswagen Bug. And this time around, he ends up on Earth during the war on Cybertron, which I won't go any deeper than that. If you're a Transformer fan, you know what I'm talking about. And he meets an 18-year-old girl named Charlie, who's sort of disaffected. She's got some grief issues that she is processing. And she and Bumblebee form this bond that is really pretty sweet for a Transformers movie. And I think this movie works in some ways that the previous films in the franchise haven't. I think the story's focus on her and Bumblebee actually makes it feel a little more intimate, a little more emotionally engaging, and we don't have just this, you know, total cacophony of a zillion robots trying to kill each other from start to finish. In this one, we only have a few scenes like that. I think more significantly, maybe the producers of this franchise have heard some of the criticism, because in the past the female characters have really been objectified sexually, and this one manages to pare that content away, and that's a really nice change, and it doesn't have as much profanity either, but it does still have some, definitely enough to get it a PG-13. This is a better movie. It's a better movie in terms of the story, and it's a better movie in terms of having less content than some of its predecessors. So, again, I would really encourage parents who have kids who are interested in this to check out our full review at PluggedIn.com.
Adam, I appreciate that you mentioned the objectification dimension of past movies. It's one of the reasons why I've stayed away from the franchise in general after seeing the first one. Do I need to see those first few movies to maybe appreciate the Bumblebee movie, or can it be standalone enough?
Nah, this one stands alone. I mean, in some ways, it's almost a franchise reboot. I mean, it's not hard to see, if this one continues to have traction, how they'll just tell the story again. Just like we've seen with Spider-Man. I mean, how many times is Spider-Man going to get rebooted? But, I think we're seeing at the box office right now that even franchises that we think have run their course, they have built-in marketing traction. And new intellectual property, as much as we think, oh, we really want something new, it really struggles. Mortal Engines is a movie that came out a couple weeks ago, and it's done terribly at the box office. So, no, you don't need to see any of those movies, but I think this is one that, especially for those of us who grew up in the 80s, it's a pretty fun movie, and you can go enjoy it with your older teens.
Yeah, again, this is the voice of Adam Holtz. We're talking about some of the different movies and video games, some of the stuff coming out of Netflix that is worth paying attention to as parents in terms of understanding what our kids might be exposed to, and PluggedIn.com is such a great place to find out so many details. And Adam, when we come back here in just a minute, we'd love to talk a little bit about an interesting documentary called Social Animals that chronicles sort of the chaos that is Instagram. So more to come with Adam Holtz next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Christ is God.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We're chatting with Adam Holtz this morning, as we do every Friday at this time, and talking about some of the different popular culture items out there that we can pay attention to as parents and grandparents on behalf of our kids. And Adam, there's maybe a lesser known release of a movie that is titled Second Act, but it does star a pretty well known name in Jennifer Lopez. Is there anything worth looking into at this movie?
You know, Second Act is pretty much what you would think. It's Jennifer Lopez really sort of maybe beginning to set up the second half of her career. She plays a woman who grew up as an orphan and always has had big dreams, and she ends up creating a fake social media resume to get a big job after being denied a promotion. And it sort of is the tension between, you know, is she going to keep her dream job, or is she going to tell people the truth and accept the consequences? And, you know, maybe more than some rom-coms, this one has a few deeper messages to it, just about the importance of friendship and of telling the truth and of the people who stick by us through thick and thin. So, you know, from a thematic perspective, it has some nice things to say. But, you know, I wish I didn't have to say this every time, but it seems like I do. It's a PG-13 rom-com, and that means we've got a fair bit of profanity, and the sexual content here is of more the suggestive variety for the most part. But we get one character in particular who just says obnoxious things, and I think it puts a damper on what otherwise might have been a really sweet movie if they could have just dialed that down two or three or five notches. But, you know, I think for most of the listeners in your audience, that content is going to be a real turnoff to what otherwise might have been a pretty nice movie.
Yeah, it's always a little bit dispiriting, Adam, when we can't have some intelligent comedic writing to make us laugh without having to always go to the lowest common denominator like that.
Well, and that's right, and I think it's even more disappointing when you see flourishes of it, you know, when you have these moments with scenes and characters and themes that really are done well, and then they have to go and wreck it with, you know, let's crawl into the gutter with a junior high level joke about body parts or something like that, you know. But it seems like Hollywood is addicted to that kind of content, and that, you know, somehow if that's not there, it's going to be accused of being prudish or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what the mindset is, but there certainly seems to be a sense that kind of content has to be included in a movie like this. And for us out here in the movie-going audience, that's pretty frustrating.
Well, speaking of lowest common denominator, I find Instagram to be a place that doesn't always have the most uplifting content associated with the photos and information being posted there. And quite an interesting documentary being released called Social Animals that kind of chronicles some of the chaos within Instagram.
Yeah, Social Animals is a really interesting documentary that your listeners can find streaming online. And it is one that takes a look at the lives of three different teens, a couple of whom have become pretty successful as stars, such, as it were, on Instagram. But it really gets into the dark side of Instagram Instagram fame, especially for younger people. I mean, there's a really close examination of how Instagram sort of inherently tends to sexualize people, especially young females. And, you know, with that, we see a number of pictures of girls in bikinis and scantily clad. And there's also some profanity here, enough harsh profanity to get this an R rating. But you know, most of the profanity is in the context of really trying to show what's happening on Instagram. So this is what I would say is a really cautionary documentary saying, man, this is a troubling place for lots of reasons for young people, and yet the allure of finding their identity, finding validation, finding affirmation is so strong. And I think it really speaks to the disconnect and, you know, even ironically in our world full of so many different opportunities to connect with other people, in some ways social media actually amplifies that sense of disconnection. So this is a terrific documentary, again, with the caveats that there is enough of that content here to push it into the R-rated category.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important for us as parents and grandparents to understand what are these some of these social media worlds and what's really happening. I know for me, Adam, I kind of see it outside looking in and little bits and pieces of that, but to actually mine into what's there can be really helpful to empower parents.
Yeah, it really can be, and I think for a documentary like this, if you're willing to take the content that comes with it, I think the important thing is it can demystify the world that our teens are growing up in today. And it's easy to feel intimidated or unsure or, man, I don't really know what this Instagram thing is, but it's probably not that bad, sort of live in this low-level denial. This really helps us see what is there and what we need to be aware of and maybe some important ways that we need to be interacting with our teens when it comes to this really significant element in their lives these days.
It's Adam Holtz, and he joins us each Friday morning. And, Adam, I know that we're on holiday next week on Faith Radio Morning, so we're going to be airing some Best Of shows that Rachel and I have been working on, as well as a Christmas Eve broadcast. And I think about holiday for me means that we're probably going to catch up on some movies. Does holiday for you mean that you're going to avoid the movies?
You know, lately it's just been all Hallmark movies all the time, so I'm not even sure how to categorize that, but we'll probably watch a couple more of those, and you know, maybe we'll pop some old classics in, see if Rudolph is still out there somewhere. But our holidays are pretty busy, so I'm not sure how much we're going to be watching movies, really.
Well, maybe you and I can FaceTime later, and we'll flip a coin and see who has to watch It's a Wonderful Life and do the review when we come back.
I think that sounds totally reasonable, Peter.
Thanks so much for what you do for Faith Radio Mornings. Merry Christmas, Adam, and Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas to you too, Peter. Thank you.
We'll take a break here for Breakpoint and some bottom of the hour news. And in the last half of our show this morning, we're going to be joined by Chris Martin, millennial evangelical, who is going to talk quite a bit about some of the Facebook privacy issues that we're seeing in our country. One of the things I enjoy about teaching in the classroom at the university level is that you can kind of get a sense of what were the most popular names maybe from 18 to 20 years ago. When you see the pervasiveness of a certain name in the classroom, it might be a Kristen or a Kirsten or an Asher. And of course, we see release the top baby names for 2018 that'll make their way into my classroom about 18 years from now. And in 2018, Emma continues to be the most popular name for newborn girls, and Oliver was the most popular boy's name. So interested to see where we go in 2019 with the naming of our children. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by Dr. Jim Bilby, who joins me every Thursday to do our Ask Anything segment and talk about different dimensions of our Christian faith. And his daughter, Sierra Bilby, also joined us in studio recently back from studying overseas in France and England. And she had this to say about her experience of the differences in religion there versus that of America.
With even just the reputation of people like going to church, like the church culture in Europe is still different. Both France and England kind of similar on this, that for us, I feel like in the U.S. you say we see so many, like there's kind of this assumption that a lot of people go to church. And when you kind of peer within, it doesn't always tend to be true. People think that there's a lot more people going to church than there sometimes tends to be. And in Europe, it's the opposite, where we think that, oh, people still go to church in Europe, but it's really not a part of the culture. Even in England, where religion is a part of the monarchy, the way that their politics play out tend to be still very separated from the religion.
Sure enjoyed Sierra's perspective yesterday about the impact that traveling overseas had on her, and as a parent or a grandparent to help our kids experience some of the expansiveness of the world can really be helpful for their journey moving forward. If you want to catch that entire segment, head to myfaithradio.com and you can hear all of what Jim and his daughter Sierra had to say yesterday. Well, up next in our final segment here for the 21st of December, we'll be joined by friend of the show, Chris Martin. And Chris and I are going to talk about some of the issues of Facebook privacy and how we can navigate that moving forward.
The Christmas season is one of my favorite times of the year. Most of us enjoy a break from the routine and embrace the holiday traditions. But for some, the extra time with kids means a time of tension at home. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. If you're facing a few weeks with your teen in the house and the probability of family arguments every day, maybe it's time to take a step back. Press the pause button for a minute. What are some ways you can change the dynamic of your home this holiday season? Maybe you need to spend time with your teen one-on-one. Maybe it's time to laugh as a family or start a new tradition. Make this Christmas one of rest and relationship instead of tension and turmoil.
Looking for more parenting wisdom? Go online to ParentingTodaysTeens.org or search for Parenting Today's Teens in your favorite app store.
Faith Radio Mornings. We're joined at this time by Chris Martin, who's been a longtime friend of the program. He currently serves as editor for the Gospel Project, which is a service of Lifeway Ministries. And Chris joins us regularly to talk about some of the issues facing millennials and the next generation here in our country and in our church. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well. Looking forward to Christmas for sure. Are there any ways in which you are planning to celebrate here next week?
Yeah, sure. So later today, actually around noon today, Central Time, my wife and I will start the trek up north. We're both from Fort Wayne, Indiana. So around noon today, we'll get on the road with, I'm sure, hundreds of thousands of other Americans and trek through the rain and hopefully no snow to get up to Indiana and spend time with both of our families until about the middle of next week.
Yeah, it's a sweet time to be spending time with family and friends like that. And I know you and I, as we've chatted in this last year, Chris, one of the main topics that consistently comes up from a variety of perspectives is that of the privacy relative to Facebook, both how Facebook tracks us and our behaviors online, but also too how often Facebook can get hacked by outside organizations. What are some of the latest dimensions of this Facebook privacy conversation?
It's so funny. I've seen friends and family sharing the year-in-review videos that Facebook has made for them recently in the last couple of weeks. You know, they make these little, here's what your year on Facebook was, and they'll show some of your top posts or things that have happened in your life that you've posted on Facebook. And it's nice to look back at what some of the most notable things were on Facebook in a given year. And I just, it makes me laugh to think of what Facebook's year in review video of itself would be, because they have had quite the tumultuous year. It was only in March. When I read this article, it was hard to believe that it was only in March that Facebook dealt with the Cambridge Analytica scandal, where a political consulting firm was found to have been illegally using Facebook user data to target ads during the 2016 election. I thought that was a year, maybe a year and a half ago.
Right.
And that was nine months ago. And so much, it seems almost weekly something has come about Facebook either misplacing user data, or companies misusing user data from Facebook, or companies using user data in a way that's actually within the rights of the companies, but maybe unknown to the users of Facebook. And that's actually the most recent development. So just this week, I want to say it was Tuesday or Wednesday night, the New York Times published an article entitled, "As Facebook Raised a Privacy Wall, It Carved an Opening for Tech Giants." And basically, here's what happened. Amazon, Spotify, Yahoo, Netflix, other Microsoft, those are the primary named companies in this article, had access to user data that Facebook says is entirely legal and entirely a part of the user agreement that Facebook users agree to when they sign up for the service, but perhaps is unknown to a lot of us. So these companies had access to the content of our private messages. They had access to our friends lists or our friends of friends lists. And what all of this information does, it's not like someone at Netflix is sitting on pins and needles waiting to read my private messages or yours. But what they can do is if they have access to this data, which Facebook has admitted they're not saying that this is untrue. Facebook is saying this is true, but it's actually allowed in the user agreement that you signed and definitely didn't read, right? and so what these companies do is they're able to harvest this data, and they're not read individual messages, but perhaps from a marketing perspective, they could put all this data, all these messages or all these friends' interests or things in a spreadsheet and perhaps create a graph of, oh, what are people talking about? What shows are people talking about? Or what, for Amazon, what purchases do they talk about us or complain about us? Or, you know, they use it for their advantage, and they would say to make the experience better for you, to tailor your Netflix, preferences more around what you want, or things like that. They make it sound like they're doing you a favor by knowing what you're interested in. But I think most Facebook users would say they feel a little violated knowing that a company has access to their private messages.
Gee, Chris, I don't know what you speak of when you talk about just hitting click, I accept after four pages of font size two qualifications relative to these things.
Right.
So I'm curious your thoughts in terms of, you know, Facebook experienced such a long-term run of positive momentum and user growth, and there's been so many negative news headlines. And as you mentioned, the Cambridge Analytica stuff, I can't believe that was a short 9 months ago. It's just been one run of bad news after another. Can a company, I know you're not a prognosticator, can't look into a crystal ball on this, but is this recoverable for Facebook, or is this going to maybe put a permanent dent in the reputation in our country?
That's a really, really good question, and one that I probably spend more time than the average 28-year-old thinking about just when I'm daydreaming in a meeting or something like that. I really, you know, I have thought Facebook has been bulletproof for a really long time. You know, everyone, as Twitter came up or Instagram came up or things like that, everyone always asked, well, is this going to kill Facebook, right? Because Facebook killed MySpace effectively. What's going to kill Facebook? Is this, is Vine, is whatever? And I've said for the last 3 or 4 years, nothing's going to kill Facebook. And I think I still think that. But here's where I would maybe modify that. I would say nothing on the outside, no other social media platform is going to kill Facebook. But Facebook may kill itself. Because here's why. Facebook has bought up or attempted to buy up every major competitor in the last 3 to 5 years. They tried to buy Snapchat for like $5 billion and Evan Spiegel, the CEO, rejected that offer. I'm betting he wished he took that at this point. They bought Instagram for $1 billion, which everyone said they were foolish for doing. And now Instagram, if it existed on its own, would be easily worth $5 or $7 million. They bought a bunch of other apps that they literally just killed so that they wouldn't be competitors anymore. Now there are all kinds of antitrust issues and perhaps monopoly issues with that. And Zuckerberg has been asked about that before Congress before. And I think that's a big issue that needs to be even beyond the privacy stuff that needs to be delved into more than it already has. So they've done that to basically block any outside competitor. But if they continue to erode trust in users, even if what they're doing with these companies is allowed, which I believe them that all of this data harvesting that companies are doing is allowed, I don't think that they're lying about that. But it doesn't make it any less weird, right? It doesn't make it any more trustworthy just because it's allowed. So I think if they continue to lose trust, the main users of Facebook are ages 50 and older, primarily, or 40 and older. As those users age out and perhaps stop using social media or die, I wonder if younger generations may be what kill Facebook if they don't come back to the platform. And so it's going to be interesting to see how Facebook adapts both to younger generations and to the security issues or data privacy issues, trust issues that it faces.
Oh, Chris, you're chuckling here because I'm 48 years old and I'm already aging out and I may just die next year. Thus, I will not be using Facebook. I love the insight and perspective you bring and that you do spend a considerable time thinking about these things. It's always so helpful here on Faith Radio Mornings to sort through this crazy world of social media. And we come back from break, we'll continue this conversation specifically about the economy and millennials as well. And there's been a lot of consternation about how the fact that millennials have killed the economy, but it's possible that it's actually the other way around. So more with Chris Martin next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Oh, come let us adore him. Oh, come let us adore him. Oh, come let us adore him, Christ. So come let us sing.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We're getting close to Christmas, 4 days away. It's been sure fun to celebrate with all of you over the past month or so as you've been listening and being in Advent together. And we're chatting with Chris Martin, who also is in pastoral ministry, does a lot of writing on behalf of millennials. And Chris, I'd just be curious really quickly, do you see a lot of people in your generation still continuing to celebrate Advent?
Yeah, in fact, I've seen sort of a resurgence among Christians, at least. Churches, you know, maybe non-denominational churches or Baptist churches. I'm a Southern Baptist myself. I work for a Southern Baptist organization in Lifeway. I've seen a lot more Baptists and non-denominational folks who typically, historically, don't officially celebrate Advent and go through kind of or really go by the church calendar a whole lot. I've seen a lot of them kind of returning to that tradition. And I think it's because a lot of people like having that sort of structure and a way of organizing and following a sort of routine for their Christmas worship. So I have seen a lot of young people both doing that and enjoying doing it, whether it be on their own, going through an Advent devotional. There are so many great ones out there, or doing it formally at their church.
Yeah, it's great to know that we're all connected generationally across some of these practices and in the kingdom we so often talk about here on Faith Radio Mornings. And, of course, relative again to millennials coming up over this Christmas weekend, Saturday is going to be widely understood to be one of the most significant shopping days outside of the Black Friday weekend over Thanksgiving. And, Chris, there's been a lot of talk about how millennials and the purchasing habits, that they're less consumeristic and therefore they are responsible for having killed the economy on some level. But the data shows that maybe it's actually the economic structures that have really brought harm to the pocketbook of millennials.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And it's, you know, some people may be listening to this and saying, oh, there go the millennials just complaining about how life is so difficult for them again, or there go the millennials just playing the victim again like they so often like to do. And I understand those are stereotypes that are sometimes proven to be true among young people. But as someone who experienced student loans himself and my wife and our family, and someone who has had dozens of friends who have struggled under the burden of student loans, there is something different with us, and a lot of it is rooted in the issue of student loans. I saw something recently that I was having a conversation recently with a friend. Young people today, kids who are in college today, who are technically iGen or Gen Z following millennials, are taking out fewer student loans than millennials did. And we joke that our hope is that they learn from our mistakes. But millennials were basically sold this idea, this social contract that said everything will work out if you just go to college. Like, just go to college. Whatever you do, just go to college. I mean, my parents told me that. I never didn't plan on going to college, but the purpose of high school is to get you ready for college, right? Not to get you ready for the real world, but to get you ready for college and all of these different ideas. And the idea was, if you go to college, everything will be fine. Then you won't be stuck doing X, Y, or Z dirty job or whatever. But if you can just go to college, you'll be able to achieve the American dream. And in his recent article in The Atlantic, Derek Thompson, who's an incredibly gifted writer, I've read one of his books, it's great. He said, in other words, young people took on the debt to pursue a college degree only to discover that the cost of college would push the American dream further from their grasp. And I'm not anti-college, and I know that you're a professor. You're certainly not anti-college. I think college is incredibly valuable and people should pursue it. But I think the idea that the American dream is only achievable if you go to college needs to be something that we abandon, because there's so much student debt that comes along with college. And for a lot of millennials and young people still, I'm sure, it has prevented them from just achieving a lot of the things that they want to achieve. Now, obviously, we're believers. We don't think the American dream is the pinnacle of what we need to be pursuing, right? Accruing student debt does not prevent you from following Jesus and being a faithful believer. But I think we do need to be aware of the effects, the long-term effects of what student debt and loans and things like that have on students, and that sometimes in an increasing number of cases, the investment into a college degree may need to be reconsidered, not for everyone, but for some people, it may not be the best spend of time or money. So I think that's an important thing to know when dealing with millennials and seeing how they interact with the economy.
Yeah, Chris, I think it's pretty wise advice. I mean, the spiraling cost of education, when it's upwards of $150,000, $200,000, that's a very different value proposition than it was a generation ago. So, well, thanks for joining us as you have all year at Faith Radio Mornings. We certainly appreciate your perspective and insight from the next generation, and I wish you a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Yeah, you guys too. I look forward to joining you in the new year.
We'll take a break here for our show and wrap up Faith Radio Mornings for the year of 2018 from a live telecast. Well, that does wrap up our live broadcasting for 2018 for Faith Radio Mornings. Next week, we have some tape shows for Christmas Eve as well as Best of 2018. Really excited to bring those to you next week. And Paul and Rachel in studio here, it's certainly been a wonderful year with the two of you. I really hope that it's a great Christmas moving forward, that you have a good time of rest and relaxation, all of our listeners as well. But been delightful to be with you all throughout the year.
Well, thanks. It's been great for you. Now, you do have your homework for this weekend, right?
I do. My understanding is this is A Wonderful Life, but I am going to flip Adam Holtz for that, because if Mr. Movie Guy hasn't seen it yet, I'm on pretty safe ground at this point.
No excuse. And actually, I took him to task because he talked about, you know, they're watching all these the Hallmark stuff. It's like,
yeah.
You watch Hallmark, you won't watch something like that? I mean, seriously?
Yeah.
He said, well, it wasn't his choice because he can't get the remote out of his daughter and wife's hand. So.
Well, Rachel, I will say that I saw Paul pretty animated over there on the other side of the studio and talking with Adam after our segment. I think, you know, Paul's pretty worked up about this Wonderful Life stuff.
Yes, yep, and it really is something you should watch. So just, you don't have to flip the coin with Adam Holtz. Just watch it.
Just watch it, yep. All right. Yep. Well, and certainly I'll take the advice of Carmen LeBurge, and I will live tweet her during the show with my theological responses. Well, it has been enjoyable with all of you this past year, and fixing our eyes on Jesus together, just 4 days away from celebrating the birth of our King, and to really enjoy being on the journey. It sort of anchors us to a kingdom that is bigger than anything going on in this world, and we'll continue that theme into 2019. As we head out for break here this morning, we've been playing favorite Christmas songs from all of our guests, and this one is my wife's favorite song titled God With Us.
Well, you've come to bring
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.